I gaslit her to protect myself, until I couldn't tell what was real anymore. It started with a flicker in the mirror, a trick of the light. Then it was missing time, moved objects, a journal hidden under the bed, filled with secrets about me. I thought I was the one pulling the strings, until she stopped flinching. Now I'm hearing voices in my own voice. The mirrors don't reflect right. I remember a crime I swore never happened, and a woman at the lake whose name I forgot on purpose. But the worst part, she's been gaslighting me right back, and I don't know who I am without the lie. Welcome to the Skillful Art of Manipulation podcast. If you haven't already, please consider following us on your favorite podcast platform. Today we present to you, Gaslight Me Gently. Let's dive into this thrilling narrative together. Chapter 1, The Flicker in the Mirror. Reality isn't something you lose all at once. It peels. It drips. It whispers its exit. It was the flicker that started it. Just a second, less than that, but long enough to carve a fault line down the middle of an ordinary Tuesday. We were brushing our teeth in silence, our reflections perfectly still, matching every movement, like obedient little shadows. She was on my left. I saw her in the mirror. And then I saw her move, a twitch, a step, something quick. Except when I turned my head to look at her, she hadn't moved at all. And neither had I. She caught it too. Her eyes locked onto mine in the mirror, wide and sharp, and just a little too focused. Like someone holding in a scream behind their lips. "Did you see that?" she asked. There it was, the first crack. Not in the mirror. In her voice. And in that fraction of a moment, I hesitated. I hesitated because I had seen it, or thought I had. But the truth is, I'd been seeing things like that for weeks now. Peripheral shadows. Hints of movement in still rooms. Words that echoed before being spoken. But I couldn't afford for her to think that I was the one slipping. So I blinked once, twice. I smiled, slow, practiced, a curve I'd perfected over years of deflection, and said, "No, probably just the overhead light. You know how it flickers sometimes." She nodded too quickly. That's how I knew she didn't believe me. Her hand lingered on the edge of the sink. Pale knuckles. A single chipped nail. It looked like she was steadying herself, like the ground had tilted just enough for her to notice. She looked afraid. And that was the moment I knew I'd have to start again, recalibrate, reframe. Pull the leash in tighter. The truth was getting too close. Our apartment sat on the 12th floor of a building that boasted steel, silence, and a sweeping view of the city skyline. That's what the listing said. The kind of place you pay too much for, because it makes you feel like someone. But the space had started to turn against us. Not in obvious ways, not creaking floorboards or strange drafts, but in the way light moved through the rooms, in the way sound echoed too long. Like the apartment had become too aware of us. Too awake. The floors were white marble. The walls a cold eggshell that looked more sterile than soothing. Everything was just a little too polished. Too clean, too symmetrical, like someone had staged it for a magazine photo shoot and then forgotten to remove the glass between the image and real life. She said it made her feel calm. But she'd started lighting candles in the daytime. Lavender. Sandalwood. A smoky, bitter rose. Every room had one. Even the bathroom. It felt like she was trying to layer warmth over something that refused to be softened. I never told her I hated the smell, or that it reminded me of a basement I haven't been in for years. Tuesdays were for therapy, or so I told her. I kept the ritual tight. Shower, dress, grab the leather-bound journal I never wrote in, and leave just before 9 a.m. I'd head toward Dr. Lansbury's office, a name I pulled from a business card in a trash can outside a clinic, and then I'd veer off to a cafe two blocks away, the one with the cracked green awning and a barista who never smiled. I'd sit by the window, order a cappuccino I never finished, and stare out at the crosswalk, watching the office door I was supposed to walk through. Sometimes I made up monologues in my head, practice runs for fake sessions, pretending to be vulnerable, pretending to change. I didn't go to therapy because I was afraid I might slip. I stayed away because I knew I'd slip. I knew that if I sat in a room with someone who was trained to peel people open, they'd find what I'd buried, what I'd done, and I couldn't afford that. Not when she was already starting to dig on her own. She'd started asking questions in coded language. "Do you remember that guy you used to work with? What was his name again?" Or, "Didn't you say your phone was stolen last year?" Things that didn't seem suspicious out of context, but I felt the pressure behind them. The way she looked at me while asking. The way her pupils dilated, just a little too much. The thing I did, the event, the incident, the accident, it wasn't something I ever let myself remember fully. I treated it like a dying animal in a dark room. I fed it silence. I kept the door locked. But she was pressing her ear to the keyhole. And worse, she was remembering things I'd gone out of my way to bury. She described a park I hadn't mentioned in years, the color of a missing man's jacket. A name I thought I'd only spoken once, under my breath, while she was asleep. So I did what I had to do. I planted false memories. I rewrote old ones. You're probably thinking of your ex. He worked near that park, right? No, that wasn't me. That was your cousin's boyfriend. Remember? You told me that story last year. Small edits. Little redirects. Just enough to nudge her perception, like rearranging furniture when someone's out of the room. And when she looked at me like she wasn't sure if I was right or if she was just tired, I'd touch her face. Gentle. Reassuring. Intimate. You've been so stressed lately, I'd murmur. Maybe it's just catching up with you. She never argued out loud, but her silence got louder. The night I found the notebook, I wasn't snooping. That's what I told myself. I was changing the sheets. She was in the bath. I lifted the mattress to tuck in the corner, and there it was, wedged just beneath her pillow side. Black. Leather. Slim. No title. I opened it and saw my name before I even turned a page. He did it again. The coffee mug, the one with the chip, I always keep it on the left side of the shelf. This morning it was on the right. I didn't move it. He tells me we've never been to the lake house. I remember the smell of pine needles. I remember the cold tile floor. He's rewriting me, page after page. Not linear. Not tidy. But filled with suspicion. With clarity. With strategy. She wasn't unraveling. She was cataloging. She was tracking every inconsistency, every discrepancy. Quietly building a case against me. Not in a legal sense. Worse, she was collecting truth. Real truth. Her truth. And I couldn't let her keep it. I put the notebook back exactly as I found it. I smoothed the mattress. I turned off the hallway light. Then I sat in the living room and listened to the water drain from the tub like blood from a wound. She emerged wrapped in a towel, eyes glazed, lips parted like she was about to speak, but didn't. She walked past me without a word, and I knew she knew. And she knew I knew she knew. That night, I couldn't sleep. Every sound became suspicious. The hum of the fridge. The tick of the wall clock. The distant murmur of a car door slamming 12 floors below. I laid there in the dark and thought about the flicker in the mirror. Thought about the things I used to believe were solid. Concrete. Real. Now I wasn't sure. And that was the most dangerous thing of all. Not that she was confused, but that I was beginning to question the lines I'd drawn. Morning came cold and too bright. I made her coffee before she asked. Her favorite mug. Just the right amount of milk. No sugar. You were talking in your sleep last night, I said casually, stirring my own cup. You said something about a mirror. She blinked. Slow. Calculating. I don't remember dreaming. You sure? I tilted my head, frowning just a little. You sounded scared. She looked at the hallway mirror. Her throat moved as she swallowed nothing. I don't remember, she repeated. But her voice was softer now. And she drank the coffee. I kissed her temple as she stared out the window, the city bleeding gold behind the glass. She didn't know what I was planning yet, and I didn't know what she was hiding, but something was coming, something neither of us would be able to lie our way out of. Not forever. Chapter 2. The distance between us. You don't notice the distance growing until one day. You whisper across the room, and they don't hear you anymore. It began with silence. Not the comfortable kind, not the hush of two people who know each other well enough to sit in wordless contentment. But the kind that hums, slow and low, beneath the floorboards. The kind that pulls tension across your skin, like piano wire. There were whole hours now when we didn't speak. She moved through the apartment like smoke. Fluid. Quiet. Elusive. I watched her carefully. Not with open suspicion. No, that would have tipped my hand too early, but with a soft domestic attentiveness. A glance here. A question there. A smile when she reached for the cabinet and hesitated before touching the handle, like she expected it to be hot. It wasn't the things she did that alarmed me. It was the things she stopped doing. She stopped leaving her journal out, even by accident. She stopped asking me to help her carry in the groceries. She stopped telling me when she was going out, and more importantly, when she'd be back. I would wake up some mornings, and the apartment would already be empty, the smell of her perfume still clinging faintly to the sheets. I'd lie there, blinking at the ceiling, heart climbing in my throat, trying to decide if she was running errands or running away. The terror came slowly, like frost through a window pane. That week, she started locking the bathroom door. That had never happened before. Not in the entire 3 years we'd lived together. She'd always trusted me with her softness, her rituals. I used to stand in the doorway while she washed her face, her fingers moving in slow circles with rose-scented cleanser, and I'd make fun of her for using a $60 toner that smelled like garden dirt. "You wouldn't understand," she'd say with mock solemnity, dabbing under her eyes. "This is war paint." Now the door stayed shut, locked, lights humming behind it, water running longer than necessary. Sometimes, I'd lean close and try to hear what she was doing. Was she crying? Whispering to someone? Writing? I never caught anything specific. But one night, as I passed by with a glass of water, I paused. The door was closed, but not sealed all the way. A sliver of sound crept out. She was laughing. A low, private laugh, like she'd just thought of something no one else would find funny. It chilled me more than if she'd screamed. I tried to recover ground, to keep her orbiting me. I cooked more, played her favorite records, the old ones she used to love, back when we first moved in. I even ordered the same wine from that place we went to for our third anniversary, the one where she cried at the table and told me I made her feel safe. That version of her was gone now. Or maybe she wasn't gone. Maybe she just realized the safety I offered came with chains. One night, I found her standing in front of the full-length mirror, barefoot, arms crossed, staring at her own reflection like it had just betrayed her. She didn't see me at first. I stood in the hallway, silent, watching her. When she finally noticed me, she didn't flinch. "Do you ever feel like you're watching yourself live someone else's life?" she asked. Her voice wasn't distant. It was clear, present, like she'd been waiting to say it. I gave her a smile, soft, practiced. "I think everyone feels that way sometimes." She nodded, slowly, like I just told her something useful. Then she turned away from the mirror and went into the bedroom. I stopped sleeping. Not entirely. I'd catch short bursts, 20 minutes here, an hour there, but it was never restful. Never deep. My dreams had turned to static. Broken conversations, cracked windows, a door I couldn't close no matter how hard I pulled. Once, I dreamed of the water again. That place. The place where it happened. Where everything started to unravel. The lake. The dock. Her body. No, not her body. A body. Not my girlfriend. Not the woman I lived with. Someone else. Someone I never named. Not even in my own mind. She was the secret I buried with stones in her pockets. And now, somehow, that weight was rising, bubbling up through the floorboards of our life. She came home late the next day. Later than usual. Past midnight. I was still awake, of course, sitting in the dark, pretending I wasn't counting the minutes since she left. When the lock turned, I didn't move. I just watched her silhouette step into the apartment like she owned the quiet. She didn't notice me right away. She closed the door, slipped off her shoes, moved to the kitchen and poured herself a glass of water. Then her eyes met mine, and she didn't flinch. "You're still up," she said. I couldn't sleep. She sipped her water. That's becoming a pattern. I waited for her to say more, to ask if I was okay or why I looked so pale, but she didn't. Instead, she walked to the fridge, opened it, and stared inside like she'd forgotten what she was looking for. I stood up, slowly, approached her. I put a hand on her back, light, almost apologetic. She tensed. Not a lot. Just a small ripple of muscle beneath her shoulder blade. But I felt it. I always felt it. "I was worried," I said. She didn't answer. "What's going on with you lately?" I asked gently. That got her. She turned around, met my eyes, and in that moment, I swear I saw the truth staring back at me, sharp and crystalline, like ice cracking beneath boots. "You mean besides the fact that I don't trust anything I think or remember anymore?" she said, voice flat. "Besides the fact that every time I ask you a question, I walk away feeling like maybe I'm the one losing my mind." I froze, not because of what she said, but because of how she said it, like a line from a script, a test balloon. She was watching me closely, not with anger, not even fear. But curiosity. "I think you're just exhausted," I said, steady measured. "You've been working more, right? That app launch." "I don't have an app launch," she interrupted. "I haven't worked in 3 weeks." And there it was. The trap. The misstep. She stared at me, and I knew it was over. That particular lie, whatever it was meant to cover, had expired. But I recovered. I frowned, tilted my head like I was the one being misled. You told me, I began. I didn't, she said. And then she walked away. I opened the notebook again that night. I wasn't even pretending anymore. She'd moved it. It was no longer under the mattress. It was inside a makeup bag in the back of the closet, buried beneath winter scarves. Like she wanted me to find it. This time, there were new pages. He says I told him about the lake. I never did, but he knew about the boat ramp. He described it exactly. I left my phone recording in the bedroom while I showered. He talks to himself. Whole conversations. Half of it doesn't make sense. He keeps looking at the mirror. Not at himself, at it. I closed the journal and stared at the wall for over an hour. The next morning, I set up a meeting with a real therapist. Not because I wanted help, but because I needed evidence. A shield. A trail of sanity in case things spiraled and someone started asking questions. I needed someone to document how stable I was. How reasonable. I needed a paper trail that said, I am not the dangerous one here. But when I sat in the chair, across from the real Dr. Lansbury, yes, I found the actual one, just to be poetic, something unexpected happened. She asked me a question. A simple one. What brings you in today? And I opened my mouth. But nothing came out. Not at first. Then slowly, I heard myself say, I think someone's trying to rewrite my reality. She blinked. Just once. Then nodded. And something inside me cracked. I didn't know if I was lying anymore. Chapter 3. Don't forget to remember me. Gaslighting doesn't start with a lie. It starts with a moment. A pause. A hesitation. A slow erosion of what someone knows to be true. Until all that's left is your version of their life. Dr. Lansbury's office was colder than I expected. Not physically, the temperature was fine, but emotionally. The walls were a dull gray, just a shade darker than slate, and the shelves were lined with books I recognized but had never read. Carl Jung, Irvin Yalom, Bessel van der Kolk. Titles that whispered about trauma and memory, and how easily the human mind can betray itself. It felt like walking into the lion's den wearing a guilty name tag. I sat on the leather couch across from her, legs crossed at the ankle, hands folded loosely in my lap like I had absolutely nothing to hide. I told myself to breathe through my nose. Keep my eyes soft. Keep the mask on. She was a woman in her 50s, maybe early 60s. Iron gray hair pulled back into a smooth knot. No makeup. Not even mascara. She looked like someone who saw through people for a living, and I hated her for it instantly. So, she said, pen poised over a legal pad. You said someone's trying to rewrite your reality. I nodded slowly. Yeah, can you tell me what that feels like? I could have said anything. That was the terrifying part. It wasn't that I didn't have an answer, it was that I had too many. I could tell her about the mirror. I could tell her about the journal. I could tell her about the laughter behind locked doors, the misremembered conversations, the way my girlfriend seemed to be peeling off layers of herself like old wallpaper to reveal someone sharper, more strategic underneath. But instead, I said, it feels like the ground isn't where it used to be. She raised an eyebrow. That's poetic. Thanks. I don't mean it as a compliment. I laughed, a little too loud, then shook my head and looked down at my hands. She tells me I said things I know I didn't say, I added. She moves things and swears I did it. She forgets whole days and then insists I'm the one losing time. Dr. Lansbury jotted something down. And this has been happening for how long? I paused, long enough to fabricate a timeline that didn't sound too neat, too rehearsed. Couple months. Maybe three. She tapped the end of her pen against her chin. Do you think she's doing it intentionally? I looked at her. And I smiled. I don't know, I said. The problem with telling lies is that after a while, you begin to lose track of the scaffolding that holds them up. You forget which version of a story you told, to whom, and when. You forget the edits, the omissions, the careful redirects. And eventually, you find yourself double-checking your own memories just to keep your narrative straight. That's when it starts to rot you from the inside out. When I got home that evening, she was in the kitchen, barefoot, humming to herself, peeling oranges over the sink. She didn't look up when I walked in, didn't ask how therapy went. Didn't acknowledge me at all. I watched her for a moment, the way her fingers moved, the way the juice pooled in her palm and trickled down her wrist. She didn't wipe it away, just let it run, slow and sticky, down to her elbow like blood. You didn't answer your phone, I said. She shrugged. Didn't hear it. You always hear it. She glanced over her shoulder then, and in that split second, I caught it. The calculation. The tiny flick of her eyes. The pause that lasted just a beat too long. She was pushing me, testing the boundary, seeing how far I'd go. So I stepped closer. I took her wrist gently, lifted it toward the sink, and let the water rinse the citrus from her skin. She didn't pull away. "You're quiet lately," I murmured. She smiled, faint, detached. "You say that like it's a problem. I just miss talking to you." She turned to face me then, her damp wrist still resting in my hand. "Funny," she said. "I was just thinking the same thing, only in reverse." That night, I searched her phone. I'd never done that before. Not because I respected her privacy, I didn't, but because I'd never needed to. She was always open, honest, clumsy with her passwords, too trusting to hide anything. But lately, she'd changed her lock code, turned her screen away when I was near, took the phone into the bathroom with her, and left the fan running to drown out any sound. So I waited until she fell asleep. She always curled toward the wall when she slept, her back to me, her breathing shallow and rhythmic, like she was pretending to be in a dream long before it actually came. I slid the phone from her nightstand with slow fingers, careful not to let it buzz. It took 3 tries, but I cracked the code. A birthday not mine, not hers, her sister's. That stung more than it should have. Inside, I found a notes app with 3 entries titled only with dates. The most recent was just from the night before. I opened it. 10:13 p.m. Said he was working late. Came home 2 hours early. Eyes dilated. Smelled like chlorine. Asked what I was cooking even though I hadn't made anything. 10:28 p.m. He moved my journal again. I didn't mention it. Just watched. He looks thinner than usual. Gaunt. Like something's eating him from the inside out. 10:39 p.m. I don't think he knows I'm documenting him. But I think he wants me to. I think this is a game. I just haven't figured out the rules yet. I nearly dropped the phone. The careful structure of her observations. The timestamps. The clinical detachment. It was too precise. Too methodical. It wasn't a journal. It was a case file. The next morning, I was the perfect boyfriend. French toast with cinnamon and nutmeg. Her favorite blend of coffee, brewed just the way she liked it, with almond milk and a splash of vanilla. She looked at the plate like it was a loaded gun. "Trying to bribe me?" she asked lightly. "Trying to remind you," I said. "Of what?" "That we used to be real." She stared at me for a long time, fork in hand. Her lips parted, as if to say something honest, something raw, but then she changed her mind. "I don't think you know what real means anymore," she said. "We drove that night, just to get out of the apartment." The walls were pressing in again, and I could feel her gaze even when she wasn't looking at me. I told her we could grab milkshakes from that late-night place near the river. The one we used to sneak off to when we were still new, still hungry for each other's stories. She agreed too easily. It scared me more than if she'd said no. She let me drive. The highway stretched like an open wound under the moonlight, lines blurring beneath our tires as I flicked through the radio stations. She sat with her hands folded in her lap, staring out the window as if trying to memorize the darkness. "You ever think about leaving?" she asked. I kept my voice level. "Leaving where?" "This life. This version of us." I swallowed hard. "Sometimes. Do you?" She nodded slowly. "But I don't think I'd know where to go anymore." There it was again, that edge in her voice. That undercurrent of meaning I couldn't decode. I reached across the center console and took her hand. It was cold. She didn't pull away. When we got home, she said she was tired and went straight to bed. I sat in the living room for hours. Didn't move. Didn't speak. Just stared at the hallway mirror and tried to remember which version of me I was supposed to be tonight. The boyfriend? The liar? The man with blood on his hands? Some nights, I still dream of her. The other her. The one I left in the water. Her face isn't clear anymore. Sometimes it morphs into the woman I live with now. Other times, it's a blur of lips and eyes and pleading. I don't remember why we were out there. I don't remember what I said before I pushed her. But I do remember the sound her head made when it hit the dock. A soft, wet crack. Like an egg breaking against tile. I still don't know if she's trying to catch me. Or if she already has. Chapter 4. Things We Forgot to Forget. Some lies are so deep, they start to rot the truth. Until you can't tell where the mold ends and the memory begins. The mirror moved. Just a few inches, barely perceptible. But I know where it was before. I remember. It always hung level with the edge of the hallway archway. Dead center. I checked it each morning as I left the apartment, a quick glance to fix my collar, smooth my hair, reinforce my expression. And now it was wrong. Shifted to the left. Tilted slightly downward, like someone had unhooked it, adjusted the nail, and rehung it without a word. I stood there in the hallway barefoot, still in my undershirt and boxer briefs, staring at the frame. My coffee grew cold in my hand. I waited for her to call out from the bedroom, to explain it casually. Oh, it was loose, so I fixed it, but the apartment was quiet, like a theater before the curtain rises. Like someone had stepped out of a scene and left the set behind. I didn't ask her about it that day. That would have given her too much. Instead, I began cataloging things of my own. She wasn't the only one who could take notes. I created a locked folder in my phone, disguised as a utility bill app, and inside I began a timeline. June 3rd, mirror has moved. Noticed at 7:42 a.m. June 4th, found loose threads on her scarf in the trash. She hasn't worn that scarf since December. June 5th, she asked if we still had the blender. We never owned a blender. June 6th, heard her on the phone. She used my name. Laughed after. Not at a joke, at something else. I logged timestamps. Audio cues. Snippets of her phrasing. Patterns in her behavior. I wasn't documenting her out of fear anymore. I was documenting her out of necessity. Because I couldn't trust my own brain to hold onto anything solid for longer than a few hours. In therapy, Dr. Lansbury said I was over-identifying with destabilization. She said it calmly, like it was a term I'd seen in a textbook somewhere. Something I could hold between my fingers and dissect with tweezers. I stared at the glass sculpture on her desk. A twisted, blue-tinted shape, like a frozen scream. What does that mean? I asked, even though I already knew. It means your identity is becoming too entangled with the sensation of reality slipping. You've started to rely on that feeling. It gives you meaning. A framework. So you're saying I want to feel like I'm losing control. I'm saying it's familiar to you. Familiar isn't always safe. But it is comfortable. I laughed. Shook my head. That sounds like a therapist's way of calling me an addict. To certainty, she agreed. You're addicted to certainty. And when you don't have it, you create it, by rewriting what you remember, by blaming her. My smile didn't reach my eyes. Or maybe she is manipulating me. She might be, Lansbury said, voice unflinching. But you came to therapy to understand yourself. Not her. That night, I woke up to the sound of drawers opening. Not slamming, just the slow, deliberate slide of wood on metal. Quiet. Intentional. I glanced at the clock. 3:11 a.m. The hallway light was on. A soft, muted glow that shouldn't have been there. I padded out silently, heart climbing into my throat, bare feet cold against the tile. The light spilled from the bathroom. The door was open an inch. She was inside. I saw her reflection before I saw her. She was sitting on the edge of the bathtub, hunched over something in her lap, a black pouch unzipped. The contents glittered under the overhead light. She wasn't brushing her teeth, wasn't peeing, wasn't doing anything that made sense. And she didn't look up, didn't hear me, or maybe she knew I was watching. My throat closed. I turned, walked silently back to the bedroom, and slipped under the covers like nothing had happened. 10 minutes later, the light flicked off. Her footsteps padded down the hall. The bed shifted as she got in. Neither of us spoke, but I didn't sleep for the rest of the night. The next morning, the bathroom was pristine. Drawer closed. Light off. No trace of the black pouch. I stood in the doorway, brushing my teeth, staring at my reflection, trying to remember when this all started. The actual start. Not the flicker. Not the journal. Before that, there had to be a moment. A singular second when everything turned. But the more I searched for it, the more my memory felt like fog. Thick and humid and blank. There were holes. Whole afternoons I couldn't place. Whole weeks even. And then there was the dream. The one I kept having. The doc. The woman. The sound. I couldn't remember her face, but I remembered the way the water swallowed her. The sound her hair made as it slipped beneath the surface. A hiss, like paper catching fire. I never reached for her. I just watched. And when I woke, I always found myself staring at the ceiling, breathing like I'd run miles, my hands clenched so hard the sheets were torn. She left a sticky note on the fridge. Just one sentence. You forget the same thing over and over. That was it. No good morning. No, I'm out. Just that sentence. Written in blue ink, in her perfect looping cursive. I stared at it for nearly half an hour. I didn't know whether to laugh or scream, because the worst part was, I didn't know what she meant, and that meant she'd already won that round. By the time the next therapy session came, I was sweating through my shirt. I told Lansbury I was afraid I'd hurt her. She raised her brows. Hurt her how? I opened my mouth, closed it, then said, not recently. Physically. I nodded. She didn't flinch. Did you? I don't know. I meant it. And for the first time since these sessions started, I saw something flicker in Lansbury's eyes. Not judgment. Not even concern. It was recognition. And that scared me more than anything. When I got home, the apartment smelled like eucalyptus. She was in the shower. I found the black pouch, the one I saw her with in the bathroom, tucked behind the towels in the hall closet. I unzipped it, hands trembling. Inside were 7 thumb drives, labeled by date, each one meticulously cataloged, each one a memory. I clicked the oldest one into my laptop, and then I heard myself, my voice, talking, alone, in the living room, pacing, rambling. She knows. I know she knows. But maybe she wants me to. Maybe that's the point. Maybe we're both pretending not to notice, so we don't have to admit we've already passed the line. Click. Another file. I'm sitting on the couch, staring into the dark. I don't remember what she looked like. I don't even know if it happened. Maybe I made it up to justify the way I feel. Maybe guilt is easier than truth. Click. One more. She says I forgot something. But what if I didn't forget? What if I buried it? I yanked the thumb drive out before I could hear more. The bathroom door opened. She stepped out, towel wrapped around her, eyes meeting mine. You look pale, she said. I stared at her. Do you record me? I asked. She didn't answer. Just walked to the bedroom and closed the door behind her. Later that night, I walked to the hallway mirror. Stared into it. Long. Hard. And for a second, just a single fractured moment, I saw something standing behind me. Not her. Not me. Something else. I turned. Nothing. Just empty space. But when I looked back at the mirror, I swear it had moved again. Just an inch. Just enough. Chapter 5. The echo that wears my voice. There's a moment when a lie becomes so loud, it swallows the silence. And after that, even the truth sounds fake. The thumb drive was still warm when I found it on my nightstand. I hadn't put it there. I hadn't even touched it since hiding the rest of them inside the vent behind the couch, wrapped in an old t-shirt she never wore anymore. The one from the Monterey trip, with the faded coral print and the scent of salt water still clinging to the fabric. But this one was different. No label. No date. Just black plastic and the faintest scratch across the side like it had been chewed or burned. It hummed in my palm like a trapped insect. I wanted to throw it out the window. Crush it. Eat it. Anything but plug it in. I stared at it for 20 minutes before giving in. The screen flickered. And then there I was. Me. On camera. Shaky handheld footage, like it had been filmed from behind a door or around a corner. I was pacing, barefoot, shirtless, talking to myself in a low, frantic whisper. You can't keep doing this. You can't keep fucking doing this. She knows, she knows. My voice cracked. I looked at the mirror. Touched it. Leaned in close until my breath fogged the glass. Then I turned, stared directly into the camera, no, into the person holding the camera, and whispered, "Tell me who I am." I slammed the laptop shut. The screen stayed dark for a full 30 seconds after. Just black. Just silence. And then a faint click from the hallway. The mirror again. Always the goddamn mirror. I didn't sleep that night. Not because I couldn't, but because every time I closed my eyes, I saw myself blinking back at me from inside the mirror. Not a reflection. Not a copy. Just another me. Taller, maybe. Leaner. Wearing the shirt I threw out last winter. Mouthing something. She's behind you. I didn't turn around. The next morning, I went to the kitchen and found her already awake. She was sitting at the table, legs folded beneath her, sipping black tea with 2 slices of lemon. Not how she usually took it. Usually she needed milk, sugar, a dash of cinnamon if we had it. She hated citrus. But she didn't flinch when I noticed. She didn't say a word. Just raised the mug to her lips and held my gaze. You sleep? I asked. She smiled. You tell me. The way she said it. It wasn't sarcastic. It wasn't angry. It was flat. Like she genuinely didn't know. Or like she knew I didn't know. I walked into the bedroom. Opened my drawer. The knife was missing. Not a big one. just the old paring knife I kept in a hidden sleeve under my socks. Emergency comfort. A totem. I never used it for anything, but knowing it was there made me feel anchored. Now it was gone. I walked back out. Tried to keep my tone casual. Have you seen my old camping knife? She didn't even look up from her tea. I threw it out. The blade was rusting. It wasn't. And I never told her I had it. Dr. Lansbury canceled our next session without explanation. An email. Cold. 2 lines. Apologies. I've had to reschedule our appointment due to a personal emergency. We'll follow up soon. I read it 6 times. Then I called the office. Straight to voicemail. I walked to the building just to see if it still existed. It did. But her name was no longer on the plaque outside. Instead, it read, Dr. Harper Graves, PhD, Somatic and Trauma Therapy. I pressed the buzzer. A male voice answered. Graves practice. You're not on the schedule today. I stepped back, stared at the intercom, the buzzer, the door. Everything looked the same, but the hallway smelled different. The old carpet had been replaced with tile. The paint was no longer dull gray. It was bone white. I blinked. Once. Twice. Then walked away. The apartment changed after that. Subtly. Slickly. At first, it was the corner plant that died overnight. Then the microwave reset itself to military time. Then the fridge began humming a full octave lower than before. Not louder, just deeper. Like it was groaning from beneath the floor. I'd wake up and find the art on the wall rearranged. A photo missing. A frame turned face down on the bookshelf. She never acknowledged it. She just moved through the apartment like none of it had ever been different. Like it had always been this way. She stopped looking me in the eye. That scared me more than anything. Not because it felt cold, but because it felt like she was afraid of what she might see if she did. One night, I came home and found every clock in the apartment blinking. All of them. Microwave. Oven. Wall clock. Her phone. Even the digital watch I hadn't worn since grad school. I checked the news. No blackout. No power surge. I asked her about it. She smiled, lips twitching at the edges. Maybe we finally ran out of time. I recorded myself while I slept. Set up my phone on a tripod. Plugged in a second mic hit record. Rolled over and waited for the dark. In the morning, I reviewed the footage. At exactly 2:13 a.m., I sat up. Didn't open my eyes. Didn't speak. Just stared. Straight ahead. For 7 minutes and 42 seconds. Then I laid back down. That would have been enough. But then I heard it. A second voice. Not hers. Not mine. Whispering. Indistinct. Like someone speaking from inside a tunnel, muffled and wet. I replayed it 12 times. Still couldn't make out the words. But it was there. I confronted her the next day. Cornered her in the hallway. Physically blocked her path. I need you to tell me what you're doing to me. She didn't flinch. Didn't move. Just looked up at me like I was a reflection she didn't recognize. What if I'm not doing anything? She asked. What if it's you? You're flipping the apartment. You're leaving notes. You're filming me. No, she said. You are. And then she held up her phone. A video. Me pacing. Talking. She doesn't see it. But she will. I'll show her. I'll make her remember. I just have to change a few things first. Just a few small things. She watched me watch myself. And then said, Do you remember saying that? I didn't. But I couldn't say I didn't. Because what if I had? What if I had been doing this all along? Later that night, I walked into the bathroom and found her toothbrush soaking in bleach. I asked why. She said nothing. Just smiled. And walked away. I went to the lake. I don't remember getting in the car. Don't remember the drive. Just remember standing on the dock, water black and still beneath me, the sky pulsing with stars like warning lights. I knelt. Touched the boards. They were damp. Wet. Like someone had been here. Just recently. I saw her reflection in the water. Only when I turned, she wasn't there. Just me. And the cold. Chapter 6. I don't know who's driving anymore. The scariest part isn't forgetting what's real. It's realizing that, somewhere along the way, you chose to. I lost time. That was the first thing. I remember waking up in the bathtub, fully clothed, skin damp, hands pruned like I'd been there for hours. The water was cold. Not freezing. Just still. Still like a body long after death. I couldn't feel my toes. Couldn't remember why I got in. Couldn't remember if I'd even turned the water on myself. The lights were off. The door was open. Her toothbrush was gone from the counter. I stared at the dark hallway and felt a silence settle over me that wasn't silence at all. It was waiting. It was breath held in another room. It was her. Somewhere in the apartment. Watching. The days stopped happening in order. I'd open the fridge and find food I hadn't bought. A carton of eggs with 3 cracked shells, but no mess. A Tupperware labeled "Don't Forget" that I couldn't open, no matter how hard I tried. I'd check the mail and find envelopes addressed to names I didn't recognize. Not just hers. Not just mine. Names that felt familiar, like deja vu with teeth, but meant nothing when I tried to say them out loud. I stopped reading the calendar. The dates blurred. The ink bled. The magnets wouldn't stick anymore. I stopped trusting clocks. And eventually, I stopped trusting sleep. She spoke less now. But when she did speak, it was always the same phrase, said at different times, in different rooms, for different reasons. "You're not the only one who remembers it wrong." She whispered it as I passed her in the hallway. Murmured it while brushing her hair in the mirror. Said it aloud during dinner, once, without preamble, in the middle of a bite of risotto. Then just kept chewing. Like it wasn't a warning. Like it was a promise. And it was always followed by a pause. A beat of silence just long enough to make my breath catch. She never explained it. She didn't need to. Because I started remembering things that didn't happen. There was a girl. Blonde. 17 maybe. Younger than us. She had a chipped tooth and a tattoo on her ribcage. A moth maybe, or a flame. I can't remember which. She's in my memories now. Not all of them. Just a few. At the gas station near the old highway. In the back seat of my car. Near the lake. Near the lake. But she was never there before. She was never real. Was she? I checked the vents again. The t-shirt was gone. The thumb drives gone. All of them. In their place. A roll of black film negatives. I held them to the light. Photo after photo, not printed, just shadowy outlines in reverse, of a man sitting alone on the floor. Head in hands. Knees bent. Mouth open in what might be a scream or a yawn. It was hard to tell. Harder still because the man was me. Only I didn't remember taking the photos. Or being in them. Or owning a camera. I started hearing the door open at night. Front door. Always at 3:11 a.m. Click. Creak. Steps. Sometimes she'd be in bed beside me already. Sometimes not. Sometimes I was the one at the door. I tried to leave. I packed a bag. Wallet. Phone. Clothes. I made it as far as the elevator. Pressed the button. Waited. Listened to the cables groan as it descended from 12 floors up. When the doors opened, there was a mirror inside. Just a mirror. No walls. No buttons. Just me, staring back at me, wearing different clothes. Clothes I didn't own. I didn't get in. I walked back to the apartment. The door was already open. She started leaving photos on the kitchen table. Polaroids. Real ones. No timestamps. No captions. Just pictures of things that made my skin crawl. My hands, holding something dark and wet and unidentifiable. A dock, slick with water, moonlight warping across the planks. A silhouette behind me in the mirror. And once, just once, a photo of her sleeping, taken from my side of the bed. I asked her, one night, if she was doing this. All of it. The thumb drives. The videos. The time shifts. The voices. The girl. The bleeding memories. The ever-moving mirror. I was shaking. Desperate. Filthy with sleep I hadn't had, and hours I couldn't prove existed. I asked her if she was trying to punish me. She looked at me like she was mourning me. Like I had already died. Then she said, so softly I almost missed it, "You're the one who opened the door." That night, I saw the hallway stretch. Literally stretch. I stood at the edge of the bedroom, and the hallway seemed to lengthen by feet, yards, until the mirror at the end was just a pinprick of warped glass. I blinked. It returned to normal. I blinked again. It was longer. Time doesn't move forward in this apartment anymore. It spirals. I heard Dr. Lansbury on the radio. Driving at night, or maybe dreaming I was, and I heard her voice. Not on a podcast. Not in a call. On the FM radio, buried between static and a pop song from 2011. She was saying my name. Over and over. "You are not safe in your version of the truth. You are not safe in your version of the truth. You are not safe." I drove off the road. Woke up on the couch. I started whispering to myself in the mirror. Every night. Little mantras. "Your name is your name. You live on the 12th floor. She was never at the lake. She was never at the lake. She was never. but my reflection would stop whispering before I did. It always stopped early, stared at me with a knowing look, and once it smiled, when I didn't. The other night, I dreamed I found a second journal. Not hers, mine. And in it were entries that described things I haven't done yet. Like, July 9th, I confessed. She didn't believe me. She made me prove it. July 10th, the water was warmer than I thought. Her eyes didn't close right. July 11th, she started calling me by someone else's name. I let her. I woke up with ink on my fingers. Black. Fresh. No journal in sight. Then she left. Or didn't. I watched her walk out the door around dusk. Said she was going to the pharmacy. But she never came back. Hours passed. Days. Or maybe it was only 20 minutes. Maybe it was me who left, and I only think I'm still here. The apartment talks now. Not in words. But in sighs. In vibrations. In a low, steady hum that builds when I say things like, I didn't do it, or it wasn't real. It hates lies. I think the walls remember everything. And I think she told them to. I'm losing names. Not just people. Objects. Words. Curtain. Grater. Rail. They vanish. Disappear mid-sentence like dust on the tip of my tongue. My own name now tastes foreign. Too many syllables. Wrong emphasis. I'm forgetting how to say I. This morning, there were pills on the counter. Laid out in a perfect row. Red. Red. Blue. Blue. Red. Red. No bottle. No label. No note. But I knew what they meant. I remember now. Not everything. Just the one thing. The one I buried. The dock. The breath. The snap. The splash. The silence. It wasn't her. It wasn't someone else. It was me. It's always been me. And still. Still I ask. What if she's making me think that? What if this is just one more loop? What if none of this ever happened? What if the truth was never mine to begin with? What if I was just something she made up? Chapter 7. The Room with No Corners. They say gaslighting makes you question what's real. But what they don't tell you is, once you open that door, you never find the exit. You just keep walking deeper. I woke up in a white room. At first, I thought it was a dream. A limbo of sorts. The kind of place your mind creates when it finally runs out of reasons to keep pretending. But no, it was real. The light was fluorescent, too bright, too cold, buzzing like it had something to confess. The walls were padded, but not soft. The kind of padding designed to mute screams, not cushion them. The bed was bolted to the floor. The mattress thin. The sheets starched so stiff they rasped against my skin like paper. I turned my head. She was sitting in the corner. Not speaking. Not moving. Just watching. I didn't say her name. I wasn't sure I remembered it. Or if the name I remembered was even real. For a long time, neither of us spoke. I stared at her until my eyes burned. And she stared back like she was still waiting for me to do something. Eventually I whispered, "Is this it?" She tilted her head slightly. "That depends." "On what?" Her voice was soft. Not unkind. Not mocking. Just clear. Certain. On whether you're ready to stop pretending. There were no windows. No clocks. No doors that I could see. Just the bed, the walls, and her. Dressed in gray. Hair pulled back. Hands resting in her lap like she was sitting for a portrait. "Is this real?" I asked. She smiled, just the faintest curve of lips. "Define real. Are you here?" "Sometimes." "Where is here?" She didn't answer. The thing about losing your mind is that it doesn't happen like the movies. It doesn't come with screams or breakdowns or dramatic bursts of clarity. It comes slowly. A tooth loosening. A light dimming. A familiar word suddenly sounding strange in your mouth. You keep telling yourself this isn't happening, until you start to feel relief that it is. Because at least if it's happening, it's real. And real is better than chaos. Right? But chaos doesn't lie. People do. I stood up, or thought I did. The moment I moved, the walls shifted. Not violently. Just enough to make me unsure if I was dreaming standing up, or remembering lying down. She remained still. "You did this," I said. "Did I?" "You recorded me. You moved things. You planted memories." "I could have," she said. "Or maybe I just told you the truth. And you didn't like what it looked like without makeup." The mirror appeared on the fourth wall the second time I blinked. It wasn't there before. A rectangular slice of reality, floating just above the floor. Framed in silver. No reflection inside. At least, not at first. Then it started playing. Not reflecting, playing. Like a film. flickering images, grainy, warped, as if recorded through an old lens. I watched myself sitting on our couch, talking, mumbling, pacing. She doesn't see it, but she will. I have to fix it. I have to. Then a shift. New footage. The dock. The water. My hands, wet, shaking, gripping someone's shoulders. A scream. A splash. A moment of stillness. Then my voice. You were never supposed to see this. I turned to her. You edited this. You made this look like. She stood. It was the first time I'd seen her move in what felt like days. She walked toward me, slow, precise. Not with rage. Not with grief. But with finality. Like a curtain being drawn at the end of a show. I didn't need to edit it, she said. You were supposed to forget, I whispered. Funny, she said. That's exactly what you told me. The room grew colder. I started to shiver, deep, bone-level tremors that had nothing to do with temperature. The mirror changed again. Footage from the bedroom. Me talking to her in her sleep. Me holding the notebook. Me whispering into the mirror. Me whispering to myself. And then, me whispering in her voice. You were never trying to protect me, she said softly. You were protecting the lie. I shook my head. No, that's not what happened. Then what did? I don't know. You do. She stepped closer. You always did. The lights dimmed. A voice crackled overhead. Not hers. Not mine. The voice from the thumb drives. Low. Cracked. Distant. You are not the victim here. You are the echo. I stumbled back, pressing against the wall, heart slamming in my chest. Why did you stay? I asked. If you knew, if you remembered, why didn't you leave? She knelt in front of me. And for the first time since this all began, I saw something in her eyes that broke me. It wasn't hatred. It wasn't fear. It was pity. I stayed, she said, because I had to watch you come apart, piece by piece. That's what you did to me. You erased me. You made me doubt my mind, my memories, my own name. You made me feel like I was the one slipping, like I was crazy. She reached out, touched my hand. And now, she whispered, you finally understand what it's like. The mirror shattered, not with sound, but with memory. Images pouring out in rapid succession. The dock, the girl, the scream, her hand, my lies, the journal, the whisper, the water, the laugh, the truth. And underneath it all, the first night, the one I forgot, the night she asked me about the man at the lake, the man whose name I'd never told her, the man who never existed, except he did, and I killed him. I looked at her again. Am I here? I asked. She didn't answer, just tilted her head. You said you wanted the truth, she whispered. I don't remember who I was before. That's the cost. I felt myself cracking, the walls breathing, the floor melting. Then another voice. Mine. From the mirror. Wake up. I blinked. And blinked again. The room was gone. I was back in the apartment. On the couch. Sunlight leaking through the blinds. A cup of coffee in my hand, cold. She walked out of the bedroom in her robe, hair messy, eyes tired but calm. She smiled. Morning, she said. I opened my mouth to speak, but couldn't. Because I didn't know if this was before, after, or something else entirely. The mirror was exactly where it had always been, and when I looked into it, I saw myself smiling. But I wasn't smiling. Not on the outside. Only in the reflection. She kissed my forehead and sat beside me. I've been thinking, she said gently. We should see someone. Together this time. It might help. We've both been a little off. I nodded. My voice caught in my throat. She held my hand. And I realized. I didn't know how long we'd been sitting like this. The TV was on. News playing. A man had gone missing. They showed his photo. I didn't recognize him. Except I did. Are you okay? She asked. Her voice was kind. Steady. I think so, I lied. She squeezed my hand. I'll make breakfast. She stood and walked into the kitchen. I looked back at the mirror. And this time I smiled. Because I understood now. I wasn't the villain. I wasn't the victim. I was the story. And she was the writer.